You are listening to The Mombcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 235th episode, we'll be talking about comics, and that's it. We'll be talking about comics. Around the mic tonight are me, I'm Nick, and a gentleman who's new to podcasting.
Yes, I've never done it before. I've never even seen a microphone before.
Is life partner Steve.
That's right, me, life partner Steve.
I think as you're here, yeah. I think that makes Jane life partner.
I know what you mean.
Steve.
I know what you mean, but in the Mom Comics universe, that's me, isn't it? I'm the life partner. Over on Unanswered, Jane's the life partner.
No, that's
and
true.
And I'm just me, whereas here I'm obviously second fiddle, the life partner, the honorary monkey.
Except we never talk about Jane on the other podcast. Steve,
not very much.
In case you are one of the very, very small subsection of people who listen to this but don't listen to the other podcast, I mean one of the other podcasts.
Well, for you, it's like, you've got the other podcast and the other podcast.
Yeah. Steve and I, I do another podcast with Steve called Unanswered, which is great.
Yes.
It's way better put together and produced than this one, and that's because Steve is the hand on the tiller of that, and I'm the hand on... I'm talking like fucking Alan Partridge. How did that happen? Who says hand on the tiller?
That was an accidental Partridge.
Yeah, Steve produces that show.
I thought it was going to be me doing the Partridge-isms.
No.
Jism.
Partridge-jism. James isn't here this week because he's a giant tit, and Jane isn't here this week because, I don't know, unicorns or something. James and Jane are really where the whimsy comes from. I don't know if Steve and I are a bit too...
I don't know. I'm too wrapped up in the novelty of being in the same studio as you, to be
it's
honest.
It's really weird.
Yeah, because normally I'm just staring into space or watching the clock while, while we're recording Unanswered once a month.
The clock is actually behind you, so if at any point you want me to tell you what's going on with the time...
Time checks, just like real radio.
Yes, except that I'll probably do so... I always do so much cutting to make these coherent... Mm. That, but James isn't here, so I probably won't need to this time. Is that a bit itchy? Feel a bit weird about bad-mouthing James just because he's not here. See, I don't have any trouble with it.
You see, I don't have the experience of podcasting with him twice a week. To build up the resentment in order to be able to successfully bitch about him when he's not here. I just haven't got that, really. Apart from the thing of him talking through movies and not paying attention to them.
Oh my God, that drives me fucking insane.
Yeah.
He does it because you spend more time actually at his house than I do.
We'll go over, I don't know, like once every 2 months or something like that. We get a random invitation to go over on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Jane and I will go over. James cooks something absolutely delicious, and then we will watch a film or two. We'll sit there and we'll obviously eat and watch the film, and then after that there'll be a bit of chatting. And sometimes, you know, it's a film that doesn't warrant a great deal of attention, so there is that chatting, and it's absolutely fine. But there are other times where, like, I'm intently watching it and there's still some chatting going on. And it's like, if you can read how a TV show or a movie's playing out, you should be able to spot when there's like not going to be any dialogue, where you could just like say something quick and it doesn't interrupt anything, talking over the dialogue or something like that, which Jane does.
Yeah.
It's like, this is going to be more than a sentence, is it? I better press pause. Not passive aggressive at all.
So I don't think she listens. You can say what you like.
No, that's true. But she heartily endorses the product.
Yeah.
But there are times when he's not even watching.
No.
He'll go off to the other end of the flat in the kitchen to sort something out in the kitchen.
I think that genie's out the bottle to have a smoke.
Yeah. He still does sometimes, yeah. Even though he's supposed to have quit stuff. Mm. And it gets... When you're someone who partakes in the more hippie activities, there is this incredible double standard that goes on.
Yeah, anyway. it's dreadful.
But anyway, I wouldn't say a bad thing about James on this podcast.
It's okay, I don't think he listens.
But he'll shoot off to the other end of the flat in the kitchen, stick the radio on, listen to God knows whatever about football.
I know.
And there's still a film going on. It's like, yeah, if I'm going to watch a film, I really want to pay attention and see how great it looks and how great the performances are and what the story's like, to go away for like 10 or 15 minutes and then come back and...
No respect for the work that's gone into them.
No, there is a lot of talent and a lot of hard work that have gone into those productions.
Some of them. Yeah, my going and watching films with Jane and James is an annual event for me. It's normally Halloween if we make it. And I love them both dearly, but it's... And to be fair, Amy would probably be this bad if it wasn't for the fact that she's lived with me for so long. She just knows it's not worth it because I spend so much time huffing. But it's like, if 10 minutes into a film, a really simple film, you are complaining because it doesn't make any sense to you, but the reason it doesn't make any sense to you is because you were talking through the first 10 minutes of the film... I'm probably going to get disproportionately irritated by that. I don't know.
Ugh.
He's tiring. Hey. But he's got so much free love out of me, that guy. Blowjobs.
Something in the back of the throat.
Yeah. Yeah. that I get to say anything I like about him. That's the price he pays.
Mm.
There's always a price. Yes, so how's
your week? James is in here, sorry. I just completely railroaded you, that was great.
How's your week? It seems a bit weird asking you how your week's been, because A, we've already talked about it a tiny bit.
Yeah,
and B, you've never ever been on the show before except as a...
So it's like, how's my entire life
how's
been?
Your entire
how
life
long have you got? not very long.
You can get an insight into some of the details behind how Steve's life's gone on the show. Yeah, unanswered. I'll put it in the show notes.
That's a good idea. The show notes that you work very hard to produce, of course.
I do. Steve and I have probably talked more about show notes than most people have talked about their spouses and children.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Hot dinners.
Yeah.
People
or
don't
hot
talk
spouses
about...
and children dinners.
People don't talk about hot dinners that much, do they? Well, I mean, Amy does. Like, midway through one meal, she'll be saying, so what should we eat tomorrow? I'm just enjoying this meal. Can we enjoy this meal? Oy vey. The thing about airplane food is... Take my wife, please. Oh, God.
Need a little drum kit in here.
Or, like, a soundboard or something.
Yeah.
Do you know, I have such a go at James for the whole thing, but it actually does add colour. The whole...
Oh, yeah, I totally flapped some paper around. Don't flap anything else around. I've got my trousers on.
It's just too easy to tell him off. You see, that's another thing. It's interesting doing this without James's flaccid penis waving in my face. Only when it's just me and him. That never happens when Jane's here, because that'd be weird. It'd be especially weird telling you about it now.
It would, yeah. So, I don't know. It's been Easter, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So, a lot of it has involved eating.
Have you had lots of... Are you really... You're very chocolatey, aren't you? Are you quite a candy house?
No, I'm actually Caucasian. I'm more a chocolate than a confection, than a sweet sort of a person. So, yeah, I have had some eggs.
We had
the chocolate variety.
We had people around for pancakes. That's been the limit of our excess.
Mm.
We've
had just, hot cross buns as well.
We didn't do that. Nice. I do like hot cross buns. Well, we decided we just fucking went for it this year. We had pancakes on pancake day, and then, as we always say on pancake day, we said, well, these are easy and they're nice. Why do we only ever have them on Pancake Day? And this year we're actually going for it. We're acting on that. We're acting on that whim. We had pancakes. We had friends over for pancake lunch and it was very nice. Could have had a barbecue though. And so now I'm kind of torn about that.
Barbecue's remorse.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
I guess what's more important really is, how's Jane? How's she doing? Is she good?
Well, I mean, I've been, you know, I've been keeping up with the Momcast for the last few weeks, and I feel like there's been some misinformation, and that perhaps I need to put the record straight.
Has James been getting the wrong end of the stick?
Yeah. Yeah. Because the autobiography is actually called Life is But a Cocktail of Gummy Berry Juice and Unicorn Tears, and he's been getting it wrong every week.
Completely fucking wrong.
Yeah.
He's such an idiot.
So I really need to put the record straight there, because James shouldn't be misrepresenting Jane like that. You know, I take it very personally, obviously.
And people are going to be Googling on Amazon for the thing he's been saying, and they're going to be finding
They'll be Amazoning else. Google Amazons.
Yeah.
Yep. And you need to be able to find the right book, because you might end up finding something on a similar vein, you know, a copycat or ghostwritten sort of thing.
Or some slash porn.
Yes. And it just wouldn't be the genuine article. It wouldn't be the real deal. And, you know, got to put food on the table. So buy the right book.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've done the same thing I've done, haven't you? Where you've found a woman that, yes, you love, but also that probably has greater earning potential than...
It so transpires, yeah.
Just but coincidentally. And James also, technically speaking, has done as well. I don't think we did it deliberately. I certainly didn't do it deliberately. Yeah, I did. I totally did it deliberately.
It's just the unique brand of self-loathing, really, yeah. Isn't it?
And I didn't count on her not really being that ambitious. So it's kind of...
Surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Shocker. Oh, well, I love
so,
it.
So... Jane is still up against a deadline on the book. Life is But a Cocktail of Stuff. It's long. And usually these books then also have a subtitle as well. So I don't know when you know...
There's going to be
you'll fit a picture on there at all. It's just all going to be words.
It's going to be a weirdly designed... Oh, I mean, it could be all text. It could be quite an idiosyncratic sort of looking... Well, it could be like the Trainspotting poster or something that was largely text.
It could be.
As long as the title doesn't go onto the back, because that'll be where the author picture goes. Is she doing it in hardback, or is it just going to be a Kindle thing?
No, it's a hardback deal. Obviously, she's still staying in France doing this book. You don't do that with a digital-only advance, that's for sure.
No.
So it's hardback, right up against the wire. And it's not actually not helping that this week... she's been sidetracked. She's really up against deadline, but she also heard that there is a small French mountain village at the east of France, kind of near the Alps, where the dead have been resurrecting.
Oh,
and
oh.
So she's gone over there to investigate,
yeah,
using the zombie training skills that she learned about 200 episodes ago.
It's because she doesn't get to adventure as much as she used to, so it's no, that's good.
Yeah, what with the job being more demanding plus the bloody book. I haven't seen her, you know, over Easter we were Skyping. I had to Skype her chocolate.
Oh, yeah. did that work out okay?
I'm made a mess of the webcam.
Yeah, that can be an occupational hazard.
And also with a chocolate.
It is so weird doing this show with someone who listens to what James says more than James listens to what he says. That's amazing. we do talk about comics. We will talk about... My week's been...
Yeah, what about your week?
All I can really remember about my week is a frenzied 40 minutes trying to sort out this studio, immediately preceded by gastrointestinal... pyroclastic flow. just referencing the recent blockbuster film Pompeii there with that pyroclastic flow is a volcano phrase. Also, the
of
name
course of, I knew that. That's for the benefit of listener, isn't it?
Yeah. Pyroclastic.
Facial expressions don't work on audio, do they?
pyroclastic flow, also the name of something, something, some woman, maybe I dated, and I don't know, I haven't got time to make that joke work. Pyroclastic flow does sound like the name of a woman, though. A woman, well, I don't know, flow isn't really a very popular name anymore, so I really need to workshop that material.
Yeah.
This week's been interesting. It's been a week of a lot of firsts, all of which I should talk about on the other podcast about babies, because it's all baby related. Not the other podcast that I do with Steve, the other podcast that I do with James. Other than that, I didn't really, just weird long weekend stuff. The problem with a long weekend is it's just long enough to remember that you prefer being at home to work. And then Sunday comes around and you're like, I've got another day. I don't have to go back to work tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And all you've really done is offset the dread you feel all day on the Sunday onto the Monday instead. And it just doesn't feel like...
It's quite exhausting over 2 days, isn't it?
It's really tiring. Mm. I find too long a break really, really tiring because I like them too much. And Amy, we filled it with visitors and stuff like that. So there was lots of gunning around. And then I had too much coffee today. So I've been feeling this weird mix of a little bit headachy, over-caffeinated, and I had a debate with the people in the refectory today about the difference between a flan and a quiche.
Right.
Because some days they sell a flan and some days they sell a quiche, and effectively they're the same thing. So I finally got them to admit today that it is the same thing, which was a little personal victory for me because I've been trying to do that for weeks. Frittata is something different. There's no pastry in a frittata.
Correct.
But... also, whether it was a flan or a quiche, I think it contributed to the over-caffeinated bad tummy I had. None of this isn't interesting. Shall we talk about this week's comics?
It's not a bad idea.
There's a whole bunch of admin. Basically, you can find all of the past episodes and all of the show notes for this are at momcomics.com.
Oh, momcomics.com. I could have done the sexy voice.
No, any second now. That's the other bit.
But you did the...
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, and...
Normally, you hand over to even do the momcomics.com.
Do I?
Yeah.
Have I started doing that? I really need to stop drinking before the shows.
Wasn't that a problem with some of the earlier episodes?
Oh God, it was a huge problem. There was violence and everything. I'm not even joking.
Every episode ended in a brawl.
Every single episode. James can't even think about those times.
But he's not here.
No, Dale. He's not. So suddenly
screw it.
I feel like I can say anything I want, but I won't.
Except this week you're fully clothed.
Yes, that's true. Always with John sitting in the corner, freaking out like a little terrified squealer, howler monkey, going, no, I don't like it when mummy and daddy fight. Because that's what howler monkeys do. Also, you can email us.
I don't want to do it now.
Email us about how well you think this show's going. At
momcast@gmail.com.
Oh, I've got chills.
Oh. Or momcast@gmail.com. Take your pick.
Am I the only person who doesn't actually have a proper Ray Winston voice? It seems like I am.
I had thought, actually, before the introductions, that I might just pretend to be James for a bit and see how that lasted. But I'm not as imaginative, really. I could just about do the voice, but I couldn't come up with the funny stuff that he does.
It's ridiculous.
I couldn't pretend that there was a guy called James and I'd just gone out of the room. And then when the guy called James left, I'd come back into the room. I couldn't even think of that.
He's I genuinely think that he could be on stage. Well, maybe not on stage. Well, yeah, stage, because you're quite a long way away. Or on the radio. Probably not TV, though. I don't think he'd fit on the screen. He's very tall.
Yes, it's his height.
Yes. So
Twitters,
and he's good on Twitter as well.
Admin.
You can also.
There's this comics review podcast in here
somewhere. You can also talk to us on Twitter. I'm Nick Sight, NixSight. Steve is
Steve Bishop, StevBishop.
And there's a James Momb and a Jane Momb. and a John Momb. And that's actually, I've just said them in ranks of how often they tweet, I think, as well.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how often they're on the show.
Yeah.
Actually, as well.
That was clever.
It wasn't deliberate. I wish no. I could say it was. They're all related. Oh. It's really weird.
They all begin with J, and they all have a mom in
yes.
them.
Yes. Yeah. We're the outsiders.
Yeah.
I think it's just as well as you're with one of them. You know, it. Yeah, you're with the middle one. And I'm with the other one. I referred to him as my podcast wife earlier today.
Oh, you did?
In an email, yeah.
Did you get podcast married?
We didn't, but we might have to. It was an email to someone who I think of as almost a podcast religious leader. So, and also a wizard, a podcast religious leading wizard. So I think now that I've emailed that James and I are married to someone who does a good podcast, that means we actually are podcast married. I don't know. Anyway,
congratulations.
So thank you. So there's that. We're also on Facebook and Google Plus and Tumblr. Really, mainly Facebook now. I know we don't have to go into the nitty-gritty of it, but really we don't really do anything on Facebook except send direct links every time a new episode gets posted to Facebook. But Facebook is also oddly where the most people actually get back to us and tell us
about
how.
Being where the people are,
yeah.
But it does mean you have to juggle an awful lot of logins.
Yes, I'm juggling the logins like you wouldn't believe. Also, Facebook's really good for baby pictures and viral videos and racism.
Ooh.
So that's nice. Should we talk about this week's comics?
I think
we
should.
Or whatever comics we got this week.
Yeah.
You go first.
Well, it's been... Hello.
Is this the show?
I think it is. Is this real life? It's been a bit of a weird week because we've suffered the Easter bank holiday curse. Usually,
yes.
If there's a bank holiday Monday, these very strange extra days off we have in the United Kingdom, if there's just the bank holiday Monday and that's it, the comics delivery still turns up in time to buy them on Wednesday, which means we've all got plenty of time to read them for the show on Thursday. I'm talking as if I'm a regular.
No, but you're right. It's all
a regular, not irregular. doesn't matter. So, I had the day off yesterday. I thought, while I'm in town, I'll go and get the comics. And then, of course, I was reminded, bank holiday on Friday, bank holiday on Monday means no comics till Thursday. And I was working today, so it wasn't going to be easy to get a hold of comics. And that means it pushes me into a corner, and I need to look on Comixology. And I haven't really bought much or anything, to be honest, on Comixology. I've had an account for a while, but I just downloaded like two or three free books and they've sat there and I haven't really paid much attention to it because I haven't been reading comics for a while, he says, being on a comic review podcast. But I sort of vowed that I wouldn't get into any more regular stuff until I dealt with the backlog, because otherwise it would just get bigger.
Oh, yes. I remember you having quite a big backlog of stuff.
And so the bank holiday curse comes along. It's time to search around Comixology, and of course if I haven't read anything for a while, I'm not in the middle of anything, so I can't talk intelligibly about that, and so it's number ones. I've got to look for number ones, and it didn't seem like it was a particularly big week this week anyway, and I've got to find ones that I'm interested in. And there was a close run with the first issue of Seventh Sword, which has come out on IDW, which looked like it was going to be a interesting mix of kind of swords and Western and
all
space,
right.
And it feels a bit like Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars. But that didn't quite make the cut. The number one that came out this week that did attract my attention and actually really surprised me, because I very, very rarely, if ever, buy anything directly from Marvel or DC.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like one of their subsidiaries, it'll be an indie. Was issue one of Elektra from
yes.
Marvel Now!
Marvel, is it Marvel Now or Marvel All New Now or something like Because Marvel Now was last... I think it's Marvel Now Then. Marvel Now and Again.
Oh, don't say Marvel Now Then. That's a different discussion.
But yes, of the newest wave of Marvel relaunch type... Well, it's not a relaunch. This is an all-new thing.
All-new Elektra. It came out this week, both in print and digital. It's written by W. Hayden Blackman and art by Michael Del Mundo, who mm-hmm. also worked on the colouring along with Marco D'Alfonso. The cover that I got from Comixology was a Michael Del Mundo cover as well. And to be honest, I think that's probably, if I was going to say out of all of the covers, probably the best one because it marries itself with the art inside. And it's a striking cover, mm-hmm. and the art inside itself is also really quite sumptuous. So the fact that they work together is nice. But if you're the variant cover sort, you've got Bill Sienkiewicz, you've got Paolo Rivera and Scotty Young to choose from. People love those Scotty Young covers. So you've got an interesting choice there. The print price, $3.99. I bought it from Comixology for £2.49. Which is still quite a lot for digital comics, and I know that you were speaking about that last week.
Is $2.49 just a straight currency conversion from the dollar price?
No. I logged into Comixology this week, it said, "Oh, we've noticed that you're in the UK. You can only buy from comixology.co.uk." Mm-hmm. So it's all listed in British currency there.
All right. Okay, that's interesting. Mm. Yeah, I wonder.
It's not anything. It's the first time I'd noticed it. Every time before, it's always been in dollars.
I wonder how that compares to Forbidden Planet prices. Certainly, it's digital should be a little bit cheaper. But anyway, yes, you've heard me go on about that.
Yeah.
But, Mike Del Mundo, I know him mainly from covers. I think he did a lot of the really good covers from X-Men Legacy. So that's how I know him. Mm. Really high concept, really beautifully rendered stuff. But did it work in a comic? How did it go? How was the comic? What was it like?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is it good?
The reason why I'd say it's so surprising that I was drawn to this was that it was totally the cover art and also the sample pages from inside, which drew me in. Now, one of the downsides with digital comics is that you can't leaf through the whole entire comic without deciding you want to own it. And so you get the cover and then you get the first five pages. As it turns out, the first five pages, once you've got past page three, essentially page one of the story, then you get two spreads, two amazing spreads. And I was looking at those and I'm like, wow. It's beautifully drawn. The colours are so amazing. So there's a painterly style. I think I'm going to have to buy this book.
Yeah.
You know, and ordinarily I wouldn't have. I don't know much about Elektra at all outside of people dressing up as Elektra at Thought Bubble or, of course, that god-awful Daredevil movie. Controversial. So that's what drew me to it. Thankfully, it sets the store very well, too. Yeah. It's not, you know, necessarily the most groundbreaking in terms of dialogue or setting the scene, but I think the story that it's going to tell is actually going to be pretty interesting. Over the first five pages, we're introduced to Elektra. She is clearly tired at this point. She's we find her in reflective mood. The first page is like a close-up of her face and also the mirror image. She's looking into a mirror. She's saying, you know, she can't see her mother in her own face. She's never even, you know, been alive at the same time as, her mother. And also that, you know, she sees her father everywhere. It's like a following her around wherever she goes. So you get this idea already that she's got a lot of weight on her shoulders. She's in reflective mood. She says that she said that she's always belonged to someone else. She's been their girlfriend. Yeah. She's been their slave. She's been their victim. And through these two spreads, you see her in a dance studio environment with ribbons, and she's obviously practicing while she's thinking about her past. And as you move into the second spread, these ribbons start changing into flows of blood, and the baton she's holding on to turns into her weapons, and it ends with the mirrors behind her cracking down, and she comes to the acceptance, and I think that she is, you know, more than anything, she's an assassin. Yeah. She's always going to be working for someone else. That's who she is. And if you can get hold of a copy or look at the previews on Comixology or whatever, do, because I think it introduces her state of mind. Mm-hmm. It sets you up for what's going to come so wonderfully that, you know, even if you don't buy it, it's worth having a look at. I think it's that good. Beyond that, we're looking at a really interesting story being set up, I think, where Elektra has basically done it all. I don't know is entirely right, but she's clearly taken care of some business. Mm-hmm. And she's tired and she's sick of New York and she wants to go out away. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. She goes to meet the matchmaker in order to find a new contract, something. Mm-hmm. Hopefully to get her away from all these things that are weighing on her mind. And it turns out that she's got the mother of all contracts coming up. As she gets set up to hunt down Cape Crow. Mm-hmm. Who, if you look at Elektra, I guess, as an assassin's assassin, then Cape Crow is also a bit like this.
Right.
He's got to a point where he is now killing off other assassins, stealing their contracts.
Right, okay.
And this has outraged the Assassin's Guild. They tried to hunt him down. He dispatched those but took the hint and went into hiding. And so now it's time to find him. The Assassin's Guild is still tracking him. They've got a large bounty on his head. But what makes this interesting is while that there are assassins related to the Guild and hired by the Guild to find Cape Crow, there's a mysterious benefactor who's got an absolute ton of cash. Mm-hmm. And has approached the matchmaker and said, I want Cape Crow alive. Mm-hmm. I don't want him dead, I want him alive. And so this is Elektra's
mission,
effectively. So you've got Cape Crow in hiding. He's got several safe houses across the world, so it's a case of trying to find him. You're going to have other assassins looking for him, wanting to capture him, probably wanting to kill him for the bounty, but then you've got Elektra having to capture him alive. So, you know, that sets something up quite exciting, quite nice, but of course there's more to that. There always is.
Yeah.
Once it's been made clear who Elektra is and what she's going to do, we then jump to another sort of a call and response to the beginning of the comic. You've got another 5 pages, a single page and 2 spreads. Mm-hmm. Of a wild man. He's wearing like an animal skull on his head. There's a mane behind him. He's got blue feathers coming out, and you know, and you see him amongst swampland and stone, kind of old stone temples and stuff like this. And he's also reflecting. He's also got an internal monologue going on. And he's got the voice of the serpent in his head. And slowly it's been calling him, saying, you know, join me in the Never Never. And he reflects on his... He once had a normal life, a boring life, where he would... I can't remember what he says, where you were born dead, I think. And he sort of gives into this voice and he starts to kill, and the serpent tells him, if you eat them, you'll gain their powers. Mm-hmm. You'll gain their memories, their dreams, their voice, the whole thing. And so we see him, and he's being more violent through these 2 spreads, and that kind of it merges into him taking out guards and invading this temple. God knows where it is. It's mm-hmm. clearly in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And he comes to a capsule, and in that capsule is, I guess, a villain which, from everything that's been built up, you would have expected is not a problem anymore. Mm-hmm. Should I say who it is?
Go ahead.
It's the first issue.
Yeah.
Bullseye.
Oh, Oh, I see. I don't know Marvel continuity well enough to know whether he's alive or not.
Well, yeah, he's been kept in a capsule, uh-huh. And this wild man reveals himself as he's looking at his notes now to see what it is, because of course the other thing is with digital comics is that it's not easy just to kind of flick through them.
No, I know.
Bloody Lips.
His name's Bloody Lips.
Bloody Lips. It's Bloody Lips is his name.
Uh-huh.
And he says that he also is looking for Cape Crow. And he's been chewing through many members of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to even find out where Bullseye is. Because in order to find Cape Crow, he needs Bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Now you've got someone else looking for Cape Crow, someone very dangerous looking for Cape Crow, who's been... slaying people, gathering their powers. So he's obviously going to be quite the foe. And it ends with Elektra being a helicopter wouldn't be right, because this is a... I'll get onto this in a minute, but it's like almost like a UFO sort of a ship,
mm-hmm.
And she's dropping down. She's diving into this island, which is supposed to be where one of Cape Crow's safe houses are or is, and there's a volcano and there's pterodactyls and there's all sorts of stuff going on. It says next Monster Island, and it's just like, whoa,
monsters, pyroclastic flow
and volcanic ash,
yep.
And planes that can't land at airports because of the ash. Target reference. But when I first looked at it, Elektra, yeah, whatever. Actually, the art won me over. The way the story was set up was really good. The fact that it's like, oh, you know, you've got assassins against assassins, or they're all trying to go for the same bounty. Different people want them alive or dead and stuff like this. You've got this guy who's like swallowing up powers and is going to become quite the foe, I think, for this story. Pretty exciting.
Quite high concept, yeah.
Pretty exciting.
Sounds like quite high concept. There's lots of different... There's lots of conflict building up there, but it's also, I guess, once it gets from the... is it all as poetic as... Because I've seen the preview of the first few pages that you're talking about. It was doing the rounds a little while ago. Is it all as poetic as that once it gets into the more thriller aspect?
You've clearly in this first issue got something a little bit different. You're introducing two key characters,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing it through some just glorious spreads. I don't know if that's particularly sustainable, specifically if, as you say, Mike Del Mondo has spent a lot of his time doing cover art and might not have as much experience with doing a regular sequential book. But I mean, once you get past those spreads and those introductions and you get into the kind of the meat and potato storytelling and its panels, that all comes together very well. They look good. I think the line art itself is probably sparser than it looks because the colouring is doing so much work. This isn't your black outline and flat colours or slightly gradient colours. I mean, this is like painterly stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a real interesting sort of muted palette that I think helps put the story in a strange place.
Yeah.
Because as you go through the book, it's not clear what time this is set in.
Yeah.
You know, Matchmaker is like a 20s flapper. She's in a big room that's got Art Deco decorations that looks like it could have come from, you know, the 1920s or 30s. And then you've got Bloody Lips kind of fighting off guards, and they're wearing clearly futuristic mm-hmm. gear. And they've got futuristic weapons, but they're guarding something in a stone temple, and it's jungle, and it's swampland, and it's marshy. And this is a mix of when is this, where is this? Which again is really cool.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's.
I mean, I don't know the first thing about continuity, but it doesn't feel like it's stuck in like a wider universe. It's in its own place. So it doesn't have the baggage of anything else, which is cool too. You know that you can literally pick this up, and it doesn't matter you know, it's not referring to stuff that you'd need to know about beforehand. This is really starting from the beginning of something.
That is pretty cool. I've got it. It's waiting in my box, because when I got to the comic shop today, they hadn't actually sorted out the comics yet, because I got there too early. So, so I haven't had a chance to get that yet, but it does sound good. Because I read a book a couple of weeks ago that I think they're probably thinking of as a companion book, the Iron Fist book, and that was so problematic in so many different ways that I really didn't enjoy it. Mm. And I think I've always got a bit of time for Elektra, mainly because of two particular runs, one by Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz in the 80s, and another one a few years ago written by Greg Rucka, who is really good. But she hasn't always been very well served by... the costume informs a lot of the treatment of her, I think, sometimes. So where she's got so much more stuff going on, I think. So I should like her, because she's ethnically Greek and, you know, got to root for the home side. That sounds awesome. That sounds really good.
I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
Sounds
very
like
tempted
it.
To continue reading it.
Excellent. Do you think you'll Comixology the rest of it, or you don't really have a comic shop practice at the moment?
I don't know. It might be easier to keep up with it on Comixology and just read it on the computer.
We all end up reading a couple of digital comics one way or another because of bank holiday weekend or something. Yeah. It's the Comixology corner that you get trapped into. Mm-hmm. But it's convenient if not the most satisfying way to
It's almost a shame, actually, that this is the comic that I've ended up buying digitally and want to read digitally, because I think it'll look so nice in print. Mm. Really do.
Yeah, I'm wondering what those double-page spreads are. They must... Because it's double-page spreads that you're talking about, isn't it? I wonder, because they'll obviously be much bigger in a comic, because you'll have the two pages.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Looking forward to it now. I might have to. I wasn't going to go in tomorrow and pick my comics up, but I might do. I managed to get a couple of my comics this week. Well, I managed to get one of my comics this week because I looked very sweetly at the man who was at the man who works there, Phil, who works at Film Planet, and he rooted through the boxes for me. I'm always getting men to root through boxes, but that doesn't even sound like an innuendo.
No.
James is so much better at the homoerotic stuff than I am. Anyway, Fuse number 3. I haven't got loads to say about this because I've talked about the first two issues already, and because it's a cop drama, murder, mystery, thriller, and so telling you too much about issue 3 kind of... I want you to go back and read issues 1 and 2, and if I told you too much about it, that'd be rubbish. But it's written by Anthony Johnston, illustrated by Justin Greenwood, with colour by Shari Chankhammer, whose name I don't recognise. In fact, Justin Greenwood I don't think I'd seen before this particular book either. Well, I think he may have done Wasteland with Anthony Johnston before, at the odd issue there. It's basically a cop thriller or a detective thriller with heavy influences of TV police procedurals. There's much more of that sort of feel to it, rather than this being one self-contained murder mystery that will be done and that will be the most we see of the characters. It feels very much like Anthony Johnston's trying to build something here that'll sort of pay homage to the cop procedurals that of today and of the past that he loves. So he's got this strong contrasting team of the female old timer who's been on this. Oh, I might not have mentioned it's set on this giant space station as well, which is kind of one of the main things about it. So there's the old timer, the female old timer, who's a bit of a badass, to be honest, and the young guy who's just got there from Earth. He's one of the only people who's ever volunteered, I think, to go on this particular duty. He's come from Germany, and he's this young black detective. He's the rookie. So he's got a good record back home, but this is his first time on this space station, and he's finding out literally a dead body falls in front of him when he gets off the shuttle. So he meets his new partner on the job, and this is all stuff that's familiar to anyone who's seen like a buddy cop movie or any the pilot of any TV show like this. But it's really interesting because the setting is quite claustrophobic. There are interesting little details. Anthony Johnston, and I'm saying this after having complained about a certain sort of world building in fantasy and science fiction on Twitter recently, but so when I say it, it sounds like an insult, but Anthony Johnston does this great job of world building because he does it properly, in that you find out details about the world, which is very rich and layered, through the actual actions of the people in it, rather than
it being spoon-fed,
there being an info dump.
Yeah.
So there's this excellent. There's lots of cool stuff to be said about the fact that one of the two main characters is an older female character, doesn't care about how, doesn't dress in a particularly gendered way, and there's no effort to soften her up or even make her too masculine. She feels very unique and very real at the same time, and there's lots to be said about that, and I'm not really qualified to say it, but the bit that really interested me, and again we're kind of in the middle of their first case, which has taken in the mayor of this space station as well, so we're finding out a little bit about the politics of it, a little bit about the sociology of it as well. But there's one bit where they have to get to their next, they have to get to a suspect's accommodation quickly, and the rookie says, will we take a shuttle or something, like, I can't remember what the name of the particular form of transport they've got is, and she says, no, it'll be quicker to walk, because of course even though this space station is vast, nothing's that. It's also very densely packed. There's a premium on space. Nothing's very far from anything else. So instead of them getting in a car and the next part of the story being relayed to you through them talking in the car and chasing leads up while they're in the car, it all happens while they're on foot to the next place. So you get this real sense of space, of space as in space and location, not space as in they're in space.
Sure. Yeah.
One of the letters in the letters page, and full disclosure, I know I've said this before, but I do know Anthony Johnston a little bit as well, so it sort of stands to reason. I get on with him, so it stands to reason I'd kind of agree with the way he feels about story and stuff like that. But someone in the letters page said they really liked it, but they didn't like the art very much, because everyone's kind of dressed in normal clothes. And aside from a couple of details, or maybe even says they're not, with no details, you can't really, it just looks like streets. You can't really tell, there's no technological shit or anything like that going on in the background, so you can't really tell that they're in space. So if the whole point of this series is that it's a cop drama in space, well, he needs to get an artist who's up to the task, because it isn't obvious enough that it's science fiction. And I'm like, it's completely obvious it's science fiction. It's just not, like, it's completely obvious that that's where it's set. It's just not Star Wars space fantasy shit. Mm-hmm. There aren't characters with prosthetics wandering around or anything like that. It's claustrophobic and everyone's on top of each other.
Yeah.
Like, the mayor knows the chief of police because they couldn't help but avoid each other. And that's ridiculous. Mayors know chiefs of police anyway. But you know what I mean? It's like anyone who has any level of notoriety knows anyone else, because it's this enclosed environment, and that's what's interesting about it. It could be a small town, you know, it could be a small town drama or any other claustrophobic environment, or a station under the sea or something like that, but it isn't. It's in space, so fucking deal with it. I don't know. And
sometimes you need to have, like, what might on the surface seem to be quite an outlandish setting in order to put the characters where they need to be. You know, how interesting would it be if it was like a provincial town, a small village or something like that, and you tried to tell the story that way.
They would be
close together. They would sort of know each other because that's life in a small community like that. But by putting them in a space station and putting space at a premium, squeezing everybody close together because building spaceships are expensive and awkward, you really physically push people together in a way that even if it was set in a village, they'd still have their picket fences and stuff. They'd know each other's business, but they could still hide away and peek behind the net curtains. Can't do that on a spaceship. It forces things even closer together.
Absolutely. And you'd have to come up with all sorts of other story reasons why it's a modern setting, but they can't just call reinforcements or... Mm. Do you know what I mean? They have to be isolated in that way. And I don't know.
Because that's the other thing as well. You've got this community and it's in a space station, but beyond that space station, there's just nothing. It's not like the neighbouring city can come and rescue you because there's just a whole lot of space out there.
One of the things I do get frustrated about is when people pick up a unique book and clearly like that unique book, but then complain about what's unique about it. I've said this about the She-Hulk comic, where everyone
the good wife thing.
Yeah, everyone
that sounds really good.
Yeah, it really is good. Everyone's saying, well, yeah, I mean, I really like that it's about this strong female character who's a lawyer and everything, but there aren't enough fights in it, and it's like. But that's why it's good. That's why it's good. Anyway, so that's Fuse. It is really good. It is $3.50 from Image, and really nicely designed, really beautifully drawn, and really well written comic. I like it. If you like cop dramas and procedurals, it's definitely worth picking up.
Groovy.
What's your next book? What did you have?
My next book, very interesting actually, because once I bought it and then did the research afterwards, it turned out to be something I hadn't quite expected. Mm-hmm. It's called Mostly Wordless, and it was released both digitally and in print this week. It's been published by Alternative Comics. And it turns out, after I did my research, after reading half the book, going, this is a weird thing. Where did it come from? It turned out that it was a Kickstarter project initially by a guy called Jed Alexander. This is his first Kickstarter as well. Mm. And it had a $7,000 goal, and he stretched just beyond $10,000. So it did quite well.
Mm.
And was fully funded in September last year. And he was going to make an 8-inch squared hardback book, which was going to collect a self-started 24-page mini-comic that he did mainly for promotion called Ella and the Pirates, and then threw in some other kind of not quite short stories, but either studies or kind of 3 or 4-page little wordless tales, that sort of thing, to put this 54-page book together. So that was all completed and great. Ended up being picked up by Alternative Comics, who wanted to also publish it and distribute it themselves. So now you're going to be able to probably find it in shops pretty much. Don't know when, but hopefully soon. It'll pop up on Amazon, I think, next month. So it's out and about. I got it from Comixology for
£1.99. Wow.
Which, considering it's 54 pages,
that's really
like,
good.
Seems quite good. But I know that it's the Alternative Comics website, and they'll have the recommended retail price and not necessarily what you'll pay for it, but be warned, their RRP is $18.95.
Wow, that's definitely an argument for Comixology there, isn't
yeah
it?
There's a big gap to be bridged between the two, so I have no idea what it will cost when it actually makes it up on amazon.co.uk or in your local Forbidden Planet, if it gets that far. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was just going to be, oh, well, it says it's been released in print and digital. Anybody will be able to get a hold of it. I'm like, oh, I don't know now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very quick read because, you know, the title gives it away. It's mostly wordless. There is very, very little text in here. But it was also quite endearing in a way that this sort of self-published, self-generated stuff can often be. Obviously, the main event is this 24-page mini comic that's been bundled in here called Ella and the Pirates, and it's awesome. It's just fantastic. You see Ella, a boy, must be a friend of hers, plus a dog, and they're all pirates, all dressed up as pirates. They're on a wooden dinghy, and they're rolling across the waves, and they're looking at the fish underneath them, and they come to a sandy shore. They fight a pirate, they look for treasure, they find the treasure chest, they take it back to their dinghy, they're sailing across the seas looking at the fish again, and then in the last two pages it's revealed that they were just playing, and you see them, they're wearing paper hats, they're being pulled around on the trolley, and then it ends with them having a picnic. It's just adorable. And that, amongst all the other stuff, and there are like 8 sections in all, just like sketches and studies. Some of them, again, of this girl called Ella, who is a daughter of some friends of Jed. Mm-hmm. And those are quite cute as well, in the respect that, you know, as a grown-up, this is an all-ages book, but as a grown-up, you look at it and go, oh, that's adorable, and you flick through it quite quickly. But as I'm going through it, and most of it's about Ella as well, so I can see that this would have more appeal for young girls than it would for young boys. You know, she's doing ballet moves in one, she's jumping up and down and goofing around with a yoga ball in another. There's this great two-pager where she's pretending to be drinking a potion and then she turns into a witch at the end and stuff like that. I just thought, what's really cool about this, and I think where it will probably work better in printed form than in digital form, is that you could give this to, like, your daughter or your niece or, you know, maybe your friends have had a little girl and you could give it to them. And either the parent could read through it with them and help fill in the gaps of the story, and kind of that could be quite an interactive storytelling, or the girl, you know, could just look through it and imagine herself as Ella and put herself in these situations and see someone dancing or seeing someone being a pirate. Made me think of Scarlet, actually, especially because she's got a fascination on pirates and stuff.
Yeah,
that she'd probably really get a kick out of Ella and the Pirates. And I think that's probably where its real appeal is, in terms of being able to put a book in a young child's hand, not having to worry about them being able to read it or not, but being able to kind of see the stories that are being told and just kind of put themselves in the shoe of the girl that, you know, in the shoes of the girl that they're looking at in the book, and, you know, just helps to feed their imagination. I think that's where its strength is. The art sort of... It made me, not because it's identical, but I think in the direction it was going in the way that it holds its line, and in the sort of the watercolor textures within the coloring, it made me think of Raymond Briggs a little bit.
All right, okay.
Not to the level of detail that you would necessarily see in some of his work, but again, just kind of it evoked that feel in the rendering, I think, in the line work and the rendering, more than any specific detail. But a surprise that it ended up not being like a one shot or something like that, but it's actually a hardback, real published book. It came from Kickstarter project, so quite a revelation from there. I hope it finds its feet in the printed form. I can't see it doing particularly well in digital. It's hard for me to say. I don't know how some of this self-started stuff, especially like some of the zine stuff or the one-shot stuff, really takes off in an environment like that. But I do hope it finds its feet in print, because there is a market out there. You just have to, you know, it's going to be hard to get that book to that right market, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, because that price point is, even if it's one of those things, even if it's worth it, in terms of it being a hardback and it having hours of, not hours, but kids could probably look through it and look through it again and again, like
exactly.
A storybook.
Yeah.
A storybook that big in hardback with that much stuff in it, if it was by someone that you knew, it would probably almost be reasonable it being that price. Mm. But people taking that sort of a risk on someone they'd never heard of before might be a little bit difficult. But then, I mean, if in digital it stays relatively cheap, it gives people the chance to sort of fall for it, and then,
yeah,
I guess. No, it sounds really interesting. I really like, although it sounds like it's almost more formal in the end, because there are stories and short stories and stuff like that, I do quite like that sort of curates egg, and I don't even know what that really means. Mm. But I kind of like that sort of book where a cartoonist has just stuck loads of stuff they've been working on in. I picked up a couple of those in digital form where it's, well, okay, some of this is just one page illustrations that are parodies or fan art of video games they like, mm-hmm. and then some of them are more fully rendered pieces, and trying to work out what the context of each piece is when it's all just been stuck together in this one book is quite interesting. I quite like that. Not quite knowing what the next page is going to be is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I like the sound of that. That sounds pretty cool.
So probably worth mentioning that if anyone is interested in that book or more of his work, that his website is jedalexander.com.
Jedalexander.com. Are Alternative Comics the ones who do loads of James Kochalka books? I think they might be. I don't know.
Top Shelf, oh, I think.
I don't know. It's very confusing. I think you're right. I think Top Shelf do most of them, actually, now that I think about it. That sounds great. That really does sound interesting. I'll put it in the show notes, definitely. The other book I picked up this week, because as I said, I couldn't get this week's comics, was a book that I actually overlooked last week. Because it's a $3.99 book from Avatar, and despite how many good books I've read from Avatar, it still always has that Avatar thing going on.
Yeah.
Where you can't, if you've been reading comics for long enough, you can't help but be a little bit prejudiced towards it. And it's a Garth Ennis book, so you never quite know what you're going to get with those either. It's a book called Caliban. It's the first issue of this. I guess it's going to be a mini-series, but I haven't really looked into that. It's written by Garth Ennis with art by Facundo Percio. So the other thing about Avatar is their stable of artists. They tend to find lots of artists who you won't have seen in other places. And sometimes that's because they found the people most willing to draw the most disgusting stuff. But sometimes it's because they're actually really good artists. What this story is about, it's a science fiction horror story. And I'm normally in the market for something like that. It's set on a mining ship called Caliban, which, you know, I think whenever you want a big enough ship, but you don't, with an everyman crew, and you don't know quite what else to have that ship be, you make it a mining ship, because, like, you know, why not? It's a model that was set in place by Alien, and it works. Fuck it. Sort of, if it's a research vessel, you expect there to be loads of scientists on there. If it's on some other sort of mission, you expect there to be military. But if you just want normal people in space, mining.
Miners.
And if you give it a name that sounds suitably horrific, like, why would you ever name a ship Caliban? I think he was a monster in Shakespeare or something, and it's never been used to describe anything particularly positive. But anyway, so apparently there aren't going to be loads of ships in outer space called the Queen Elizabeth III or anything like that. It's all going to be ships named after philosophers and monsters from ancient literature. I don't know. But anyway, so this first issue, it's set on the spaceship Caliban. It very quickly establishes through the mechanism of one of the crew being a wannabe writer. It establishes early on that she wants to write this big novel while she's out there, because, you know, hell, she's got the time. And so she's basically philosophizing about being out in space. Most of the crew, the miners, the people who are going to be doing the industrial stuff once they get to their eventual destinations, I think their mission is they're going into deep space, and as they identify places that might have resources, they're stopping off mining them and then sending that back home to Earth. Because apparently being in space, he very quickly sets up that being in space is not something that most people want to do. It's the space that we kind of know from science, which is there isn't much else out there in terms of they found the odd signs of life on odd planets, but it's always like microbes on a mollusk or something like that. It's not heavily populated space. It's just humans firing out there in this slightly navigatable bullet. And so most of the crew is asleep in stasis because, again, he establishes that there are, even of the people who are willing to go out into space and do this work, there are very few of them who don't after a few weeks of being out there. I think she puts it, there are very few people who can spend all that time looking at stars out of the window without at some point wanting to step out there and take a closer look. You know, apparently there are only very few people who have the psychology where they're actually willing to stay awake for these long journeys in the middle of space. Yeah. It's a male-female, it's a mixed crew. It's established that there are relationships there. Our three main characters are two women and one guy, and they've all got very distinct characters. Part of the problem with something like this is we kind of already know how the character demographics are going to play out, because again, Alien looms large over everything.
Indeed,
it quickly establishes the two females as the most likely protagonists, but one of them is clearly nicer than the other one. Not a narrator, funnily enough. One of them's a bit more earthy and a bit more empathic. The other one, our narrator, is a little bit self-absorbed. But because it's a mixed crew, there are flirtations or crushes going on there.
Okay,
not particularly heavy-handed, they're just kind of happening. There's a scene early on where one young guy brings the narrator a coffee, completely spaces on the fact that there's another woman and another man in the cockpit with her. So there's like this ridiculous, mundane little interchange there about, which I love that sort of thing, which is about, all right, so I don't get a coffee then. Fine, okay. And they kind of establish the character there. One of the characters is very cold. One of the male characters is very cold and very buttoned down and officious. And so you get that sense that there's bureaucracy going on there as well between the people who are like, well, I'm in charge. I'm in charge. And the handymen who, the maintenance guy who's getting stuff fixed and then having to deal with this bureaucracy and stuff. That all happens. And they're in warp. And the way they establish the physics, you kind of get the sense that most of the people flying the ship don't necessarily understand how the science works, which rings true with my understanding of how our world works, really. So they're in warp. As far as they know, when they're in warp, nothing can touch them. You can't hit anything. But then there's clearly a collision. They suddenly find that they have... It's not like they've crashed into something, but there's this alien thing out there, and their ship is half inside the other ship.
Oh, right.
And the cabin with all of the sleeping crew members, as far as they can tell from their little cockpit where they're looking out the window, most of those guys have just been vented into space by the collision. They don't know who's what, where's what's going on. And at some point, there's a suggestion that it kind of looks like an alien spacecraft, but there's another character has an encounter that suggests that it is. We don't yet know if we don't yet know how this accident happened, what the intentions of the crew of the other ship were, if they had any intentions, whether they're benign or malevolent, what exactly is going to happen. There are a couple of really horrific bits of visual motifs. One of them is the crew being the sleep pods being vented into space, because that's just horrifying anyway.
Yeah.
And again, we go back to Fuse. Sometimes just knowing that outside of... In Fuse, there's a situation where the rookie has turned up with a normal firearm. And of course, you can't use a normal firearm on a space station, or you can, but you're running the risk of like breaching the hull. And so there's that tension, and Garth Ennis kind of breaks that tension really early by having all of these people vented out into space. But there are other horrific motifs that come out of having one object materialize inside another object. It's horrific in those moments, the way you'd expect a Garth Ennis comic to be, but there's no sign of the excess that he sometimes has in other stuff. I'm sure that'll come. Or most of the variant covers have tentacles on the front cover, so I mean, we haven't seen any of that in the first issue, but it's clearly going to be there at some point. At the moment, it's the tone is malevolent, but there's no sign of an external force that's actually going to be malicious. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but at the moment there's this brooding horror, which, you know, is one of the best things about spacey space stuff.
Oh yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
The artist is sometimes fairly straightforward, but often really, really good. It's a quite solid line art. The spaceship, sometimes when you see the spaceship, because it's quite a weird, it's like a bunch of tubes attached to us. It's like a smashing together of a whole bunch of, like, the ring from 2001 and a couple of other cylinders and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of looks like how we build space stations more than how we build spacefaring vessels, but that's besides the point. And there are moments of forced perspective when he shows the outside of it, which strike me as a bit weird. But the way he draws faces is really good, and by the end of the book, I really tuned into the art. The colour's quite nice. I get the feeling with Avatar books in the past, they spent a lot of time on finding artists who would render stuff in a very definitive way. So if you wanted someone to draw a perfectly decent looking character naked or something like that, there was someone who could carry that off without too much flair, but it's all perfectly inoffensive. They're starting to get these much bolder art styles coming through. I quite like it. I'm not very good at describing art, though.
It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
Because you can describe it, but it's only really until you look at it that you can put all the pieces together.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that if this is a short story, if this is a short series, this is going to be a really tight little atmospheric sci-fi horror as well, which I quite like. And again, at the moment, I can't see much scope for Garth Ennis to go, well, yeah, I mean, this is a perfectly nice story with perfectly decently drawn characters, but I'm Garth Ennis, so I can shock you if I want to. At the moment, I'm not seeing that, but because of the tentacles, I really don't know what's going to happen in later issues. I don't know. I thought Red Rover Charlie or whatever it is, the thing about dogs, was doing fine, and then they had a vicious sodomy sequence.
Oh, yikes.
So I don't know. I don't know. I enjoyed it, though, and I didn't pick it up last week, but I'm glad I picked it up this week.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting, actually. Mm. Two space books.
Spacey. Yeah. Spacey.
And speaking of space...
What you got?
My final book was actually released last week. It's digital-only release. excuse me.
It's okay. I'll cut it.
Yeah, might as well. It's called Heads.
Oh.
It's by Ned Gilligan Williams, or N.G. Williams. And it's self-published. I guess it's his own comic label, Chomp Chomp Comics.
Yeah, that sounds made up. They're all made up, but...
Well, but some more than others, yeah. Obviously. It's a 17-plus book. It gives you an idea of what you might be in for in terms of language. And it was £1.99.
Ooh.
And again, it was another one of those books that when I was kind of trying to weigh them up against all the others to pick some out for the pod, that... again, it was the art and specifically the colours that really got me with this one. And it's just smacks you around the face, even from the cover, that this has been coloured with digital comics in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because of the way light works on screen and the way that light works reflecting off ink on paper, you're always going to get brighter and bolder colours from the screen. Mm-hmm. And Ned has really taken advantage of this in throughout Heads, but obviously from the cover, which was the first thing that captured me, is that you've got almost neon, you know, that sort of intensity of mm-hmm. of colour. You're not getting real world here. You're not getting murky. You're not getting noir. You're getting smacked in the face with purple, green, red, blue, pink. You know, and when you think of those colours and you think of the brightest one, like the day glow paper, that's the kind of colour that you're getting.
Right, okay.
It's really vibrant and unusual, really, to see in a comic, because usually you would step away from that. You'd think this is too garish or this isn't realistic or whatever. Ned just throws caution to the wind and it is all here, and it's amazing for it. And there is also a reason for it, which is fantastic, because number one, it's set in space,
mm-hmm.
or should I more like other planets in yeah. space. No spaceships here, not yet anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the main characters we encounter refer to each other by their colour.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, and I didn't even twig until I got through it, and I'm like, oh, I see, that's why that guy's blue and that guy's yellow, because that's their name, that's who they are. So the police are purple, a lot of kind of less important characters are all green, they sort of merge into the background, which is also largely green.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting technique, actually, and fits nicely with the story, and also the fact that this is an otherworldly environment that we're in too. So again, it was another book that won me over by the art. Also, to be honest, looking on the preview pages, also the dialogue and the vernacular, very British. So you've got that kind of earthy sort of British dialogue in there that makes you think of all the little zines and stuff that you would have picked up in comic conventions and stuff like that. And so I had to give it a go. So we start with a chap called Yellow, who's coloured yellow. He's a nomadic planet hopping character, and he's got a bag with him, and he's arrived on this planet, this unnamed planet, to deliver it to an unnamed person. And he's finding his bearings. He's a bit lost. And he bumps into various characters on the way. First of all, he bumps into a red who looks like a real bad sort, wants the guy's bag, and then some greens come in and say, not on your Nelly, and fight him off, and Yellow goes on his way. And he gets guided around by a pink woman for a while, who ends up luring him into the dark alley and flashing him all her bits in the most sort of malevolent nun Roger Langridge kind of grossness you can imagine.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh God, never mind, I'll make my excuses and leave. It felt like, as I was reading it, that this was quite a wordy, quite a baggy book, that this character was getting distracted and like, where's the story?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was wondering, is this just going to be, you know, more about details and kind of the journey and less about what's actually going on, you know, what's really happening. Well, turns out he bumps into an old friend of his, Blue. They hang out, they go back to his pad, they go out for a drive and stuff like that. But it turns out that all of the people he's met on his journey are all somehow related.
Mm.
And they all seem to have conspired, whether by design or just purely by fate, to finish Yellow off.
Oh,
Not
in a sexual way.
No,
okay.
No. There was no there was no final page with just white or anything like that. There was just colour everywhere. Yellow mentions to Blue that he'd seen Pink, and he's like, "Pink's my woman," and seems to take offence and just says, "I'm sorry, mate." It gets out the car and presses a button, and the car shoots off a cliff. Yellow dies in a ball of flame or whatever, his head gets severed, and one of the Reds that we saw at the beginning of the book, who'd been following Yellow throughout, picks up the bag, and that's how the story ends. So you're left with an awful lot of questions. What is this bag? What was Yellow's deal? Who are these people? But all the way through it, it's just a shock of colour and really thick lines and expressive cartoony art. The feel I get from it, the spacey feel, the art feel, I kind of want to say David Wynne, I kind of want to say Spacescape, but it's not like that, you know, but you can imagine them in the same ballpark, if you like.
Yeah.
It's got a real kind of graphic graffiti edge, but it's still quite clean, if you see what I mean. You get half tones in there, but otherwise it's just literally like bold colours, and it, you know, like I said, it feels alien, it feels spacey, it's pretty cool. The dialogue's pretty wisecracking, there's lots of internal stuff going on, there's plenty of swearing in it. If you like swearing, that's your bag. Okay. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's good. I'd recommend it.
Cool. Okay, and it's quite cheap.
Yeah, $1.99 from Comixology. And if you want to find out more about the artist, he's got a Tumblr. My middle name is Gilligan.tumblr.com.
That's a long Tumblr name with tons of potential for misspellings and stuff. Well, Gilligan. Yeah, you see.
As in right. The island.
I'll put it in the show notes. Thanks, Steve.
That's all right. Awesome. That was fun.
If we have an awkward middle bit now. There are a couple of contributions.
It's funny you mentioned that, actually, because I brought a device with me.
Did you?
Yeah. I picked it up earlier on this week. It's great. It's it looks a bit old, but it's actually quite impressive.
Uh-huh.
You know, like fax machines and stuff, where they had that sort of weird beige. Yeah. This is exactly that same thing. It's the RL5000X.
Wait a minute.
And what do you mean? And I knew that we'd get to the awkward middle bit, and we'd probably be wanting for comics news because of the Comixology Amazon thing last week. And it's whisper quiet. You won't even hear it produce the paper. It's like printing on wax paper with heat.
Uh-huh.
It's very exciting. And it's served up some comic news straight away. Literally just powered it on, and we've already got...
What's the... Was the news about one of the one verboten subject? I don't know how the word verboten is said.
No wonder it was so cheap. It turns out the RL was Rob Liefeld.
Oh, man.
I know. I've been sold a lemon.
A lemon.
A lemon.
A lemon with badly drawn feet. That's a bit of a straw man, I'm sorry. Yeah. A straw man with badly drawn feet.
Straw feet.
That was literally, I think, the only bit of news that you were sold a shit news lemon.
Yeah,
I hope you didn't pay too much for it. There was the one thing I should mention is I think a Free Comic Book Day, a couple of weeks' time, will be at Forbidden Planet in Southampton. I can't remember the exact date. I tend to rely on James for this stuff, but I think that's
coming up. There's something. Like a bit of personal shilling, actually, that I'd like to mention.
I wanted to remember this.
Yeah, because if you if you listen to Unanswered episode 20, this explains a lot why it might have taken me until April to write about my experience at Thought Bubble last November.
Uh-huh.
But as part of that, and of course you are very welcome to visit stevebishop.com and take a look at that blog post all about my weekend at Thought Bubble. It was a great weekend. If you've never been, you want to know what it's like, that's a great way of finding out a little bit more about it. But off the back of that, the comics that I made for Thought Bubble last year, the two A5 mini comics, Done and Control, have been sitting around waiting for me to make a store for it. Well, I've got that store now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, go to the website, click on the store link at the top, or go straight to my Big Cartel store, stevebishop.bigcartel.com, and you can buy those mini comics, and I will send them to you in the post.
And they are great. I've been waiting for you to get that shop set up. So
yes, I pulled my finger out during the Easter break and got that sorted at last.
Excellent.
So there was another thing that I was going to bring up in the awkward middle bit, but I know that we've waffled about comics for an awful long time, and this would just be more waffle, so it's probably best we save that for another time.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah.
And now I'm intrigued, though.
Okay, well, we won't go into it, but literally, it was going to be... literally. What is it with you and $3.99 comics?
I don't know, and I keep buying them as well. I think everyone has a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone has a threshold for what they're willing to spend. And I see myself as a person who can afford to spend $2.99 on a comic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as with any deeply held opinion... I think it's about a feeling. This is unanswered territory. It's about a feeling, but then I've come up with rationalizations that kind of make sense to me. And to me, I look at the price. The comics have not gone up in line with inflation. I don't want to go on about that too much because Back to Work had exactly the same conversation a couple of weeks ago, I think. And I know that everyone who listens to that listens to this and vice versa. But the... there are things like the economy is in a different state from how it was in the 1980s, and the price of paper and printing has gone up and stuff like that. But still, comics have gone from 50 cents to $3.99, whereas video games that now have thousands of people working on them and cost millions to make are roughly the same price as they were back then. Things have gone up in price, but not to the extent that comics have. And so I know we can't have 50 cents comics. I understand that. But I love comics so much, and I feel like they're priced so much for luxury now, when it takes you less time to read a comic than it takes to drink a pint, and they cost roughly the same amount, kind of. Yeah. And that kind of seems wrong to me. I'd like them to be something I'd find it easier to sell to people who don't. I still kind of think like a retailer. I've gone on about it. We said we wouldn't go on about it. I've gone on about it. Yeah. But no, it's a good question. And at some point, I should write it all down.
Yeah, it's something that I kind of was like, oh, this could be our chance, but. I think the show's long enough.
I mean, I think both of the one of the comics was $3.99, one was $3.50. So I'm willing to pay it more for an indie comic. At Marvel and DC, it just confuses me because they've got algorithms which are working out why some books are $2.99 and $3.99 that have nothing to do with how big the comic is. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know. We can talk about that. We'll talk about it some other time. I'm sure those two aren't going to turn up. You know, they're... frankly, I don't think their hearts are in it anymore.
Really?
I don't know, maybe.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
They're so quixotic. And exotic. And quick. I don't know. I'm not even sure what I'm talking about anymore. Steve, what are your plans for the rest of this week?
Well, I probably won't be on another Momcast
for
probably at least another 235 episodes.
So, what are your plans for the next couple of years?
Staying alive. Much beyond that, I'm not entirely sure.
That's fair.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. I don't know what's coming up.
You'll be at Free Comic Book Day.
And isn't that exciting?
It is. It's really exciting. Yes. The world is chaotic.
The great unknown ahead of us.
I
stand back, universe.
I don't know why I asked the question this week. I have no idea what I'll be doing for the next couple of weeks.
Free Comic Book Day. Last year I kind of popped down in the last hour and a half, just to swing by. I might make more of a meal of it this year, actually.
Yeah, we don't know what we're going to be doing yet, but we know we'll be doing something. We just don't know what. I don't know. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that I need to remind Amy, my wife, that that's the date that's happening, because I'm worried that we might have made plans.
Oh.
Could be awkward.
And I'll probably be editing some more unanswered this weekend as well.
Yeah.
To mention that again.
There's definitely some podcasting editing in my near future.
Sorry.
No. It's honestly... you wouldn't believe how unpolished this normally is. Thank you very much, Steve. This has been lots of fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And you were very patient. There was lots of running around at the beginning trying to...
I stood outside for 40 minutes.
Was it that long?
It was that long.
I'm
but so- it was but it was warm and I was listening to last week's Momcast and rereading Electra.
What's it,
and soaking in the sun.
What's so it like nice. actually being in the presence of actual mom while it's being recorded? Was it everything you dreamed it'd be?
Yes. everything I dreamed it had been, considering that Jane had previously shown me photos of you guys in a studio. So I had a lot of stuff to base that dream on.
Okay, it's time. We've been here a while, actually.
We have, actually, yes. So...
I hope
you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think they will have. It's awesome. Interesting.
I've been a bit inconsistent with the mic placement. I'm sure I might have peaked a few times. I might have... Not like that. You know, when I'm a bit loud on the microphone and it gets a bit distorted? It might have got like that a couple of times.
No, so. I'm laughing because it's just sweet that you even care.
Oh, yeah.
This is... I think I might cry.
I'm sorry, listener. Nick isn't, but I am.
No, it's... Nobody I've recorded a podcast with in here has ever cared about that stuff before. Thank you, contributors. You are brilliant. Thank you, listener. You're awesome. As always, thanks again, Steve. It's been lots of fun.
It has.
Bye-bye.
See, I peaked then.